Welcome to Text to Task, Simplifying Education, the show that explores the untold stories of individuals making a difference in the world. I'm your host, Gargi, and today we have a truly inspiring guest who has dedicated his life to understanding and improving the lives of Rohingya refugee children. If you like the podcast, please share, like, or leave your thoughts below. It absolutely helps. And of course, the best way to stay connected with me is by subscribing to my podcast. If you haven't already, thank you for being here today. Our guest today is none other than Professor Mehboob Alam Pradeep, a distinguished professor hailing from Bangladesh, whose groundbreaking research and unwavering commitment have brought light to the struggles and resilience of Rohingya refugee children. Professor Pradeep has not only delved into the academic aspects of their plight, but has also worked closely on the ground, making a tangible impact in the lives of these young souls. In today's episode, we'll explore the professor's journey from the early days of his research to the heartwarming stories of resilience and hope they've encountered along the way. We'll learn about the unique challenges faced by the Rohingya children, the innovative solutions being implemented, and the role education plays in shaping their future. So join us for a thought-provoking conversation as we sit down with Professor Pradeep to uncover the human stories behind the headlines and gain a deeper understanding of the struggles and triumphs of Rohingya refugee children. Without further ado, let's dive into this insightful conversation with Professor Pradeep. Joining us today is Professor Mehboob Alam Pradeep, a dedicated advocate for education and health in crisis situation, with a particular focus on Rohingya refugee children. Professor Pradeep, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Gargi, for inviting me. I'm so grateful to you.
To begin with, what is the current state of educational facilities for Rohingya refugee children in Bangladesh?
Before stating the current state of Rohingya children educational facilities, I'd like to mention something like that. After 6 years, massive influx of Rohingyas from Myanmar to Bangladesh, currently 1.3 million people of them are now refugees and residing in one of the largest resettlement Kuttupalong refugee camp. To satisfy their basic needs, they are entirely dependent on Bangladesh government. So as a part of this dependence and emergency response, they are receiving educational facilities. Currently, there are 330,000 enrolled Rohingya children, according to the statistics as per 31st of October 2023. There are 161,000 female students and 169,000 male students are receiving these facilities. 29 camps comprises of around 5,500 learning centers, including KG, grade 1 to 10, accelerated learning program, and early childhood development. And there are around 9,000 teachers and facilitators. Those are from both Bengali and Rohingya. So basically, Cox's Bazar education sector look after these programs. Apart from these, around 3,000 children with disabilities are also receiving education and other facilities by the Cox's Bazar education sector. Significantly, due to the pressing need for the education from the development perspective, the government of Bangladesh has recently approved a pilot project where 10,000 refugee children are receiving Myanmar educational curriculum, which means that this is one of the first step if they have any scope to return to their country. So that will be the first step to reintegration in Myanmar society. So these are the overall educational facilities in Bangladesh for Rohingyas. At last, I'd like to say that there are some Islamic schools or organizations where a mentionable proportion of Rohingya children are also receiving educational facilities.
So in your experience, what measures are in place to ensure the well-being of Rohingya refugee children, including access to healthcare services and vaccinations?
Oh, thank you so much. I'd like to explain these questions from the perspective of education again. According to the standard of INEE, wash facilities should be combined within the every classroom. So based on my personal experiences visiting the field as well as research, it's found that actually due to lack of fund, due to lack of land and some sort of, muscle practice in the camp, toilets and wash facilities especially are not, provided clearly. Especially girls, they face significant problems, in access to the toilet issues. I have seen that in the camps, near the downstream of the learning centers, there are some toilets, but there is no gender-specific toilets. So one toilet, so both male and female students should use. So in that case, female students are very, shy. They don't want to go. So as I also mentioned that by talking to the education sector head, they explained to me that the blockhead, which is called Majhi, so without their permission, actually, they can't, establish any learning centers. And in some cases, they need to provide bribes to them. So these are the challenges for healthcare facilities. And if I consider from the vaccination, like that COVID-19 has also impacted children, adolescents, families, and their communities. And obviously, Rohingya is not out of them, and which creates serious mental health and psychosocial concerns. So what happens? Local and international organizations work to reduce COVID risk in Bangladesh. I'd like to tell you that more than 100,000 Rohingya refugees at the first phase of the COVID, they have received the vaccination from the Bangladesh government. So the number for the children, although not specified, but available research and studies said that they are aware of this COVID-19. For example, most of the Rohingya refugee children, they know about the COVID symptoms, and this education or training has been provided by the international organizations. For example, UNICEF, UNHCR, and also Save the Children, and local partners, obviously BRAC, BLAST, and other organizations. It is also found that, for example, they know about the symptom of fever, breath, the dry cough, and other things. It was found that they know about the death, due to the COVID, and also how, like that they have received these services from the educational perspective in Rohingya camp to bridge the gap between Bangladeshi, organizations who speak in Bengali, and also, international donors, because they don't understand Rohingya or Rohingya language. So they picked some, educated person from the Rohingya community. Those have very good education, very good in, English and fluency. So in that cases, they can work as a bridging, like they bridge the gap between, education providers and receivers. So these community mobilizers went to door to door to Rohingya people and make them aware. Neighbors, friends, and relatives. So these are the things during the, COVID-19. This is the way how education, providers, they mostly used community mobilizers to make them, aware how to use, how to sanitize their hands, how to use their mask, how to, maintain the social distancing. So each and everything. So this is how, healthcare issues and, COVID vaccinations was, I would say that, looked after by the educational providers, local organizations, and international organizations as well.
So moving on to the next topic, do Rohingya refugee children face gender discrimination in accessing education and healthcare?
I would say that obviously, but I'd like to explain a bit. For example, Rohingya children's health is affected by the substantive conditions that they face in the camp, such an open source and substandard sanitation systems, which is the common problem in the Rohingya camp. The flows of open source are seen between in the sheds in the camps and summoning insects, including malaria carrying mosquitoes. Children are often playing in the bank of the urination and defections. The source time and again overflow because of poor inhabitation maintenance during the rainy season. And it is really difficult to walk through this across the camp. An addition issue is that sanitation bathhouses were built without considering gender, the location, which is the short distance from the residence. So obviously, girls, you know, often feel diffident to use the latrines. So this is the issue of the healthcare system. And definitely, you know, like that, if you consider Rohingya's culture based on the, I would say, that misinterpretation of Islamic culture. So there are also some sort of, you know, limitations. Once girls, you know, they are mature, their family members don't allow them to go outside. Even they stop their, you know, education, they stop their, you know, taking healthcare access to other organizations. So this is the strong gender discrimination from the perspectives of, you know, Rohingya family. In some cases, I also talk to teachers, you know, like that this is the Bangladesh and in Myanmar, they are the patriarchal society. So obviously they have a predetermined stereotypical thinking that male or, you know, boys should get, you know, priorities rather than the, you know, female. So I have found that there is a significant level of, you know, discrepancy or discrimination in terms of accessing, you know, healthcare systems in the camp. So if I consider for, you know, education, I'd like to divide this education system before the COVID and after the COVID. Before COVID, I found that there was a significant gap between boys and girls enrollment. And the reason is that, as I said already, the Islamic education is one of the dominant factors. That girls turns into 10, they, you know, have the experience of first menstruation, and after that, according to their misinterpretation of Islamic explanation, they don't allow their girls to attend the school. Because they think this is a sin to mix boys and girls in school during the adolescence. So that is the predominant problems in the, you know, like that camp in case of offering educational services to girls. And as I mentioned, that actually some, due to the madrasa education, many Rohingya families think that ultimate destination is death and to get the heaven. So formal education or modern education that we see, emergency education, this education is not necessary for them. So although girls are going to, you know, school, they encourage their girls or daughters to get admitted to Islamic, you know, madrasas that we go, we tell, especially girls from 9 to 10, they are facing this problem. And obviously those are, you know, like that above 10, 12, the problem is severe. So yeah, it is my experience that, based on my research activities and practical experience visiting the field, I have found that there is a gender discrimination in terms of getting education and healthcare services in Rohingya camp.
Exploring the consequences of the atrocities inflicted on the children, is there anything in place to support the mental health of Rohingya refugee children in the camp?
Yeah. Children who are Rohingya refugees have witnessed atrocities carried out by the Myanmar military, which has caused them immense anguish and violence. They have been, you know, mothers, children, and communities as well, burned down, as well as newborns thrown into the, you know, rivers. They have witnessed this such of traumatic, you know, situations, or I would say that violent behavior. To provide Rohingya refugee children with a feeling of security and normality, if I consider from the education perspective, again, according to the standard of INEE, education providers, I'm talking about BRAC because I have gone through all research activities through the BRAC as an international organization, you know. So they have created safe, secure, and lively learning environments. Learning centers, how many they have, you know, established or made or built, but they have ensured how they did, you know, they started their session with song, poem, rhymes, dancing, you know, including in their own language and English language. And I have found that, which is called the art education, lots of painting across the, you know, within the room, and children can, you know, paint them. Children can think, imagine, and that help them to reduce their traumatic behavior. And another thing is that, like that, education providers, especially teachers, they provide, you know, children a variety of charts and illustrations. So They also provide a variety of toys to these girls and boys that they can play, and they can, you know, recover the traumatized behavior. So in the case of Rohingyas, the mostly they are traumatic, you know, outside the population, because as I said, that they have witnessed a brutal killing, torture, violence back to Myanmar. So these sort of, you know, joyful environment or, you know, safe and learning environment helped them to reduce their traumatic behavior. That's the perspective of education. But if we consider from the, you know, healthcare measures or facilities, for example, UNHCR and its partners trained 182 community psychosocial volunteers who work to improve the mental health condition of Rohingya refugee children. So they organize a small group work or workshop. So they, you know, talk to them, to they listen to their voices, their stories. Then they, you know, when they become, you know, emotional, so they teach them how to control their emotion. So these community counselors or, you know, mobilizers have received training in integrative adaptive theory or method. So this is the method they have used. So these psychosocial volunteers provide safe space for individual, person to person, one to one discussion. So they led both adults and children as well in activities and provide strategies for managing emotions. So this is how they work to reduce the mental vulnerability of the Rohingya refugee children. And I would say that another thing, apart from this one, you know, another important thing is that education providers, they have provided meal during the lunch. So that also helps, you know, because they have very, you know, limited resources. They don't have enough food back to their home to take. So once they come to school, learning centers, or even in the madrasas, they receive very, you know, at least some good food, which help them to reduce their mental vulnerability. So from the education perspective, education providers, they have tried to maintain the, you know, standards of INEE to reduce the, you know, mental health pressure or issues. On the other hand, UNHCR and its partners, currently 33 partners, you know, they're implementing education and other healthcare activities in Rohingya refugee camps. So this is how they are, you know, dealing with this issue to reduce mental health stress of Rohingya refugees.
Further exploring education, what support systems are available for Rohingya families who choose homeschooling?
Thank you so much. This is interesting question. And before talking about the, you know, facilities they have received, I'd like to give a little description what is homeschooling. Because somebody can think that homeschooling means children are receiving education from their home. Exactly not. The issue is that as BRAC has many learning centers across the camp, so during the COVID, what they did previously, they have used the same learning centers, you know, brought a number of students all together per session, probably 36 to maximum 40, and per session was 2 hours. But this time they have reduced the session, reduced the number of students, maximum 6 to 8 students, they come to school together, and they kept a mobile on the chair. It is on the loudspeaker. Then teacher talks from their office or speak from the office. And, you know, children takes it, maintaining the social distance. This is how homeschooling is going on. So in this, you know, from this perspective, it is really difficult to say that actually education providers provided or provide particular measures those chose for homeschooling. But the families look like other Rohingya refugees. They have also received the same thing. For example, awareness program, that if you, you know, handshake with each other without sanitize, or, you know, so in that cases you can be affected, how to use masks, you know, social distancing. So these are the things that, you know, all local and international organizations, including educational organizations, they provided. So I would say that there was no specific, you know, facilities or extra facilities for, you know, families who choose homeschooling. Rather, they are treated as the same look like other Rohingya refugees in the camp.
To what extent can local and international organizations improve health and educational outcomes for Rohingya refugee children?
Oh, thank you. I'd like to, before recommending, I'd like to argue some, or you know, I'd like to give some scenario about the major problems of, you know, having access to education and healthcare. For example, some major factors hinder to ensure quality education of Rohingya refugees. The foremost is one, lack of certification. Receiving education, but they don't have any certificate. So if they don't have any certificate, they can't do anything. They can't use this certificate to get any job, or even they return to Myanmar. So that is one of the major problems. Another is that there is no, you know, integrated curriculum and textbooks for them. Each of the, you know, I would say that education provider, for example, BRAC, UNHCR, UNICEF, or Mukti, or other organizations, they have developed their own materials. So that is another problem. Lack of language facilitators. It's a big camp. More than 700,000 people are living in Valukali, two extension camp of Kuttupalam. But very high educated, you know, Rohingya refugee mobilizers that we called community mobilizers or language facilitators. So another thing is that, as I explained earlier, unhealthy environment and conflict between Bengali and Rohingya teachers. Because once they appoint these teachers, the salary structures between Rohingya and Bengali teachers significantly vary. So that's why they have a, you know, conflict. So that in terms of different interests, as I talk to them. So, you know, I would say that local organizations and international organizations, they can address these issues very well. And foremost, and the latest, lack of funding. Because lack of funding, they can't, you know, operate a lot of activities. As I said that, if I consider from the perspective of emergency education, BRAC Education had told me that some, you know, organizations, Islamic organizations, they provide good food with, you know, like that good meal with meat, that is, you know, beef or mutton. So in that case, they don't want to go to, you know, BRAC educational, I mean, learning centers. So these are the problems. So I would say that these are the issues that local and international organizations need to address to improve the, you know, educational outcomes of Rohingya refugees. If I consider in terms of healthcare, inadequate coverage of vaccination, that is the problem, malnutrition, overcrowding, unsanitary conditions and lack of access to safe water, and the prevalence of infectious and communicable diseases such as respiratory tract infections, diarrhea, skin disease, and waterborne diseases are the main challenges to ensure quality healthcare services for Rohingya refugees. And I'd like to add one thing about the, you know, pure drinking water or safe drinking water. Based on the religious misinterpretation, if, you know, local and international organizations, they want to provide them better and pure water supply, for example, tap water, they don't want to use. They think that this either local or international organizations, they mix some contraceptive pills or medicines that can prohibit them to, you know, I would say that take further babies or something. So that this misconception create a strong resistance that actually, you know, healthcare providers, they can't ensure healthcare, you know, facilities. So I would say that addressing these issues need to change their behavior through some training, through acquiring more funds, make them understand, appoint more educated person, especially from Rohingya community. They can, you know, bridge the gap between Rohingya refugees and the, you know, education providers. So these are the things I think that they can take to reduce or to improve, you know, to reduce health vulnerabilities to or improve health and educational outcomes for Rohingya refugee children in Cox's Bazar camp.
My last question to you is, given the prolonged displacement of Rohingya refugees, do you have any suggestion for their long-term development and integration?
Again, I would say that from my perspective, and if you consider that Rohingyas basically or predominantly they have been living in Bangladesh since 1978. It's a long time. We are focusing on 2017 because a massive influx we have seen. But prior that, at least 500,000 Rohingyas have been living since 1978 and 1999 and 1992. So what happens? I would say that, again, if I consider from the educational perspective, for the Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh, integration is really difficult and far-reaching goal. The integration of Rohingyas in Bangladesh is challenged by several factors. To begin with, Rohingyas as Myanmar, they consider they are from Myanmar, they are not from Bangladesh. So it is my personal experience. I talk to them. They don't want to stay in Bangladesh for a long time because this is not their, you know, homeland. That is the first thing. Second, opinions within the host communities is also important. Once Rohingyas came to Bangladesh back to 2017, locals of Chittagongian, they have shared their food, clothes, even shelters. And they said that they are my brothers or sisters, they are Muslim. We would share our food, clothes, and other things. But after a few years, the scenario has been changed. Now, they consider Rohingya their threat to survival. So one more thing that, you know, the last one is that Bangladesh is not the signatory party to 1951 Rohingya Convention or its protocol 1967. So Bangladesh is not obliged legally and practically to provide any sort of policy that can reintegrate to them. So that is my understanding. But as I said that education is considered as a humanitarian aspect, human rights aspect, and also development aspect. And if we consider Australia, Canada, UK, New Zealand, Norway, and other countries, they consider it as integration approach. So my understanding is that being a human being, they should receive education from the perspective of development. In Bangladesh, it is 1.3 million people. Bangladesh doesn't have enough resources to feed their own people. Although Bangladesh is rising, it is said that it is the Asian tiger in terms of economy, but practically it is really difficult to, you know. But nobody knows. Nobody knows. I'd like to give an example, last example. In 2008, by the verdict of Supreme Court, we know that Bihari refugees who have been living in Bangladesh since 1971, they were initially denied to get the citizenship. But 2008, by the verdict of Supreme Court, they have granted their citizenship rights and they are entitled to study in formal schools. So we don't know what happens in, you know, near future based on the geopolitical issues or humanitarian aspect or other aspect. So I would argue to, you know, provide them education from the development perspective. It means that to somehow, at least for a small number, the government should allow them to study in formal schools in Bangladesh.
Thank you, Professor Mehboob Alam Pradeep, for shedding light on this critical issue. Stay tuned for more insightful discussions on text-to-task simplifying education.